This is Martin Parker, Reel 8.
So, I worked there 7 years. And one day, we were exporting to South America mainly primitive tools. Shovels, spades, buckets, and eventually the boss realized that these things will not be able to export any longer because we are making them locally. So the boss was asking everybody what new ideas we have, and everybody was sitting down with the ideas. Mordecai Excelsior, I said. They were saying, yes, he's right. And one day he was going, said he was going away to Mexico and asked me to make prepare my catalog of Mexico and the prices. So I begged him, I know 2 weeks, it took a long time. He didn't need it at all. He just went home to go to see the ruins of Montezuma. And he went away for about 3 weeks. And he told me before going away that I should talk to the director with whom I was working, Mr. To ask him to start work on this job. Start writing letters to manufacturers, the doing so on. I could do it. I was dictating myself in English. Man, the secretary of the boss, Mr. Robinson, told people in the way, the dictations are much better than anybody else's. They're English. The others were not properly, do know English properly. My presence.
So, you're going to tell me why you went to London, aren't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go to London. After that, one day, I couldn't get a job. One day, he gave me notice. I came back. He said, I have to give you notice. I said, Mr. Robinson, why do I work better? Did I work properly? No, but they are against you. In my last turnover with Brazil, with Argentina, was £240,000 in 1953, the year where the Queen was crowned. And the next to me was getting, got £400. His turnover was £130. £130,000 only, not £130,000. Mine was £225,000. I noticed the books and the look on there. Came early and in the book. Where was justice, I asked. I got £150, you got £400. But told me he works, he'd been working longer, for 10 years, that's why. The Monday he called me upstairs and said to everybody in the office wants you to be sacked. What have I done? What have I done? See, Mr. Barkley, on the contrary, you are very good to train. Very good to train, but the people who don't want you to go. I said, okay. And of course, he knew that I did a lot for the company. I introduced some. There was one man who was conducting the. When the orders came, he should have entered them in that book. He had everything in his memory. He was Spanish. San Julio was his name. I said, look, if you something happened to you, you have an accident on the street, maybe who will remember all these things? So he said no. So the boss called upstairs, he had the story, called upstairs, prepare such a book. I want to go to London. Then I went to London, I was sacked, I was drawn money from the
labour exchange, yes.
But was went to London, stayed with my professor on that. He had a room for me. And I saw an address in the papers. They wanted somebody to conduct a business with selling cables. This is the line I was dealing with before the war. And the proposed salary was £2,000. So I went there, had an interview with the secretary, a lady, and then a day later I saw the boss, a Jewish man. Everybody says, he says that he knows all about the electricity. But I was working in this line in Warsaw, I said. Eventually, wanted I accept me, but he said, my salary, the salary for you will be £800. But he said in the advert, £2,000. Take it or leave it. If it was a Christian, he wouldn't do it. The human type to speak. Do that, as the Austrian did. I had to accept £800. I worked for him 7-8 years, I bet. On the eighth year, I was prompted by my wife and my late sister, Lisa. Now I went to several banks. I went to various banks, including the Queen's Bank, which is and nobody wanted to listen to me. Until I went to a bank, merchants in the city of London, and they agreed to give me £10,000, give me a room, and a secretary and a typewriter. And but they said at the same time, I asked them, and if that is so, how will you share out the profits? I said, of course, if you only have money and you have nothing, we will take 3/4 and you 1/4. I said, no, this is not good. I only bank money with you. Because they prepared the company for me with the name. If the name was Elka Electric Cables Accessories Limited, this was the name of the company. And the address was Mahalpa, telegraphic address was Mahalpa. Martin, the Polish name was Met, the A-E, the M-E. My wife's name, my wife's first name, Eve, it was Eva. Eve. And my daughter's name, and this was the name of telegraph address, Mahalpa.
And did you prosper? Did the business do well?
Yes, I got to know a man, a director of a company who was selling goods in London, and I worked for that man. One day, in the boss told me not to do any business because he wants. Bought him some goods from my boss and returned them to his cables and threw them off the drums and sent them back in a mess. Don't do any business with him. And yet, one day when the boss was away, he used to go a lot abroad. He couldn't do any business then if he was in London because he would call me in for 2 hours in his room, talk to me. Nonsense. But how many orders have you? What are the prospects? I couldn't tell you that the prospects. When I get the order, the order is here. But the worst of all was, he took away my best time. The 2 hours and he came about 10 o'clock, 6, 12 o'clock, something 1 o'clock. I didn't have time to dictate to the girls. But I had to prepare the work, the calculations. So I took work home. And I had got a machine. I first read the bit in a company. I worked there, I prospered very well. The company did a lot of business. But only when he went away.
When you were left to your...
Left to myself, to my own. I dictated a lot. I wrote letters to people and so on.
Yes. Now, you, very interesting, you mentioned that your change of name. Was it necessary to have an English name?
The headmistress of the school in Liverpool, high school in Liverpool, told my daughter, I advise you, your father, I would tell your father to change his surname. Because if he, the name was supposed to be Courtney, P-O-K-O-R-N-Y. With this name, you can't do any business in England. So I changed my name to a name for the telephone director. And put M, the same initials, M-P, Martin Parker.
Did you feel different now that you had a different name?
No, I felt better with the English name.
You felt better, though? You
did? But better. Because Mr. Paul Courtney, how do you pronounce it? How do you spell it? It was complicated.
Did it give you a new identity?
Of course. I went to a solicitor, made a statement, that as from this day, I want to be known as Martin Parker. And then went with this declaration and got a passport in my name. Then in my daughter's name, and then my wife's name. She got a little later document that was joking, you are foreigner, you should live with us. And this will help me a lot. I have a lot to say, but I can't.
Yes, well, I want, yes, it's very interesting, you know. And
I started the business on my own. In the first year, I made 280,000 turnover. In 1954, I have the book upstairs. This was in this country.
Yes.
I didn't say, that gave me the time to make contacts with abroad. I got from various factories through my road.
Yes.
I got samples and then printed, especially on cardboard, the types of capers I can sell, attached them to the cardboard with a piece of rubber.
Yes, I understand. It's very interesting, this, but I don't think I'd better ask you much more about your business. You know, it's important that to know that you succeeded.
Yes.
Yes, I want to really go back to the ghetto, if you don't mind, to ask you some more details. You have obviously a story you want to tell me, haven't you?
It was that when more or less 7/8 of the people of the ghetto were already removed by the Germans, of course, the beating and shouting and so on. And I still worked for the Germans from Mr. Hallmann and Mr. Schilling. Because of this, we survived there. One day in the morning, on Sunday it was, I had calling. Everybody come down by 6 o'clock and take as much as you can carry. I was afraid to take my mother-in-law because she would definitely not be let go. But I made a mistake by taking my daughter. But they said, if you go and open the doors of all the houses and search, but you need to take my mother-in-law with us. I had to go to a place about more than a kilometer from us. Niska Street, it's in N-I-S-K-A, Niska Street. And there, when we came there, we saw hundreds, thousands of people. What was this? They were making a selection. Who to go home, who to go to the concert dumps and just be destroyed. I met on my way to that place, I met Mr. Hallmann. He spoke to me in Deutsch. First, then he's a commentary. Don't be afraid to come home. You go back. I did ask him about my wife and child, who were there, my sister and my butler. There I met Mr. Shindelsky, who was that German, who also was working for the other company. He also told me in German, don't be afraid to come back. In German, he told me. Same. And we were there sitting in this room which was, this kitchen was destroyed, no water closet existed, nothing. There were thousands of people. And my sister-in-law, the one who survived with us, said she likes to cook. She started cooking something for us to eat. It was a good thing for us, as a matter of fact, to be able to have strength. I don't know what you cook something. And then there was a signal, a shouting, everybody from Hanuman come down. And if I had to stand in a row of four or five people, six people, I don't remember. This was Niska Street,
A state street.
To get to our house, to Hanuman, we had to go about a kilometer, straight line, and then turn right. But in this corner here, it was not like a German, with sleeves turned up, it was a warm day, and he had a whip in his hand. The whip had an end with it of lead. And my brother-in-law and his wife went first. And they were standing in the front rows. But I had my wife and my daughter. I didn't know what to do, how to save my daughter. In the meantime, I noticed something else. A man whom I knew, he was a dentist or a chemist, I don't know what he was. He had with himself, his son, adopted boy. All the characters came out in the moment of trial. And he said to the German, I want to go with my son. You can stay, he can go, but not your son. He stayed. But another father with a beautiful daughter of 15 years left her, and he went through. And I knew I had met my child, they did not let me through. And what is more, on both sides, when you turn left into the street, on both sides of the road were standing Lithuanians with guns. So I met there a neighbor of mine who worked they called it number 13. They lived in a house, say the house number 13, in Warsaw. He lived in the same house as I did. His name was Bolesław, Polish name, but called him Bolek, abbreviated. And the Bolko said, help me, Mr. Bolek, help me. I'll tell you what, he said. He knew me. He was not a good man. Then he had a bad name. But he helped me. And I asked, there was a push cart. And there is rucksacks. He said, put your daughter under the cart, under the rucksacks. And I will go to the gym, declare this is my things are there. And you will push the things. He will let you so you go through. And so it happened, and they told the Germans, and my brother and I went through, but my daughter was in the pushcart. When we were already about 100 yards from the street, from the beginning of the street, and there were Germans, Ukrainians on both sides watching us, came a Jew with a child of a year old, and put her there, and they put under the under the rucksacks. I was afraid to leave my daughter there because a child of 1 year has no control. She will start crying, and my daughter will also be found. took out my neck here, by the neck, like a dead dog. And when my wife was standing in a row already, and gave it there. And there was man in that row. He said, "I don't want to take this hand away, because if they will find the body, the child will all be killed." And the other standing in the same queue as the queue, about 8 or 10 in a row, he said, "We'll kill you if you say one word." He shut up. My wife covered her with my hair. She was wearing a coat, put under her coat. And he got help. I know what happened in America. What America? The Ukrainians haven't seen this. How could they not see? I don't know. Maybe they were. I took it out on pushed from a stand in the middle of the road.
Yes, but did she look like a parcel?
Yes. Because when I kept her, I took her at the back here to carry her. I didn't take her by the neck, I took her in the middle, some by the coat she was wearing. Not by the neck. She looked like a little parcel, like a dog or something. And I gave her to my wife, and my wife covered her with a coat. And then the man, as I mentioned, was very close. And then, because of this, in all the time people were coming, it came out I was 712 when they started the counting. And only 700 people were to go back. Came Mr. Schindelsi, the German, to me, he said, "Don't be afraid." In German, he told me, you go home. And they took out 13 people, 12 people, who were not so necessary, too important to him, and left me there at night, and the last row I was.
That must have been a very tense, terrible period for you.
And when they eventually started going home, and they told us to stand up, we were kneeling, asked us to stand up later. We started going walking, and I was last, in the last row. And my sister and my brother, who were one of the first, in the first rows, when they came there and they saw my mother-in-law, they started crying because they thought we were perished, because the Germans took us away. But when we came, we got an ovation. Mid the child who came, mid the child, they had an ovation from all the people, my friends and so on. Then he said, never again will I take my daughter out into these.
Were you there during the ghetto uprising, or had you left?
No, I left. Look, I tell you this. My wife left after six trials. On the seventh time, it was difficult to get out. She got out on the 20th of March, 1943. We contacted my brother, my wife's cousin, who didn't talk to him before the war for some reason, in the first. And he was a policeman, a Jewish policeman.
Yes, you have explained about how you and your wife got out, you know.
And he then helped us to take my mother-in-law, my sister first. They went on a lorry,
Yes, you have explained that on the record, Mr. Parker. But I was just wondering, you know, if the Jewish underground had started before you left, which I think was March 1943.
Still preparing themselves. Prepared.
Yes, what evidence was there of an underground before you left?
We knew they existed, but never saw them.
How did you know they
existed? I knew who belonged to it.
How did you know that?
We heard various stories. Did not think he belongs to it. And all young people, this. I would have had, if I didn't have a wife and a child, I would have joined them. But I had responsibilities.
Where did they get the arms from? Did you have any knowledge of that?
They bought them from the Polish Labour Party. And some hours they rusted. Couldn't work, didn't work. So when I left on the 8th of April, 1942. And the uprising started on the 19th. If I waited longer, I wouldn't go out, were able to go out, because when the uprising started, the whole ghetto was surrounded by Germans. I wouldn't go out.
Did you think that might happen? Was that one reason why you left?
I knew it was going to be an uprising, but I didn't know when. I was not in the secret. There were very few Jews in the ghetto, only they were in the wild ghetto. Apart, they called it wild ghetto. The Jika Street, Genscher Street, Smotra Street, they were Miller Street. They were wild people living in houses we didn't be, where the Germans never had anything to do with them. They're afraid to go there. They called them wild people. They never went under German scrutiny. And on the 19th, those people started an uprising. They had guns, and they had Molotov cocktails, and similar things. And the Germans, a general, came with an army, some soldiers, and he was beaten. He had to go withdraw himself. The fight in the ghetto lasted about 14 days, or longer, I don't know. I have a book here about the uprising.
Did you hear anything about that while you were in hiding?
No, but I know this. I do know, there was an idea before we left together at various propositions to go into hiding in one of the houses where they partitioned one house, put a wardrobe on the entrance of one room, and this is the room where they were supposed to stay. I said, no, I will not stay this. And what they did is, they went into the Germans from house to house and said, come down or we want to build all the streets, all the houses. And they did it. And I have pictures of you here. And the people were jumping from the houses, not to be jumping alive and killing, being killed. When they fell down, they were killed. And my wife went about that time with my landlord to the Gestapo to collect a passport. So she made application on the basis of her birth certificate. A German, not part identity card, it was not a passport. And she saw this with her own eyes, with my landlord. So Jews being jumping from windows. And the Poles said, had Poles standing nearby, the Jews have been fried. This was the commentary. Jews have been fried, with laughter. Jews have been fried.
If you hadn't escaped when you did, the chances were you would have perished. Yes.
I would have perished. But later the Germans surrounded the whole ghetto. Nobody could come out. Hermetically surrounded. And anybody who was inside was slowly but surely taken out and killed. Killed on the spot or taken out and sent away to whatever they did, I don't know. Anyhow, the Germans, when the ghetto started the uprising, it was a general Stroop. And he brought later a whole army to fight the ghetto. Jews. The Jews were throwing cocktails, multiple cocktails on them. And they had the withdrawal, the Germans had the withdrawal. Several times, I have a book, I think the story. Until they brought more army, eventually, Jews were living in canals later. They were meant in the canals.
In the sewers?
In the sewers.
Yes.
From the sewers, they came out and shot the Germans, went back into the sewers. Mm.
Do you think it's important that the Jewish people did stand up and fight the Germans?
Yes, it was somebody had to show that Jews are not cowards. And Jews are not cowards. You see what happened in Israel when you fight the Arabs. They are cowards there. In six days we conquered all the Arabs, including freeing Israel in Jerusalem. No, well, if somebody attacked me, I wouldn't be frightened. I'm not a coward myself. And they were fighting against the strength of the army was much 10 times, 50 times bigger than the few Jews they were fighting and they get, and women as well.